It's Genesis chapter 5, verses 3 through 9 of the Unholy Seed, part 14. Who was a Jew? And Adam lived 130 years and begot a son in his own likeness after his image, and called his name Seth. And the days of Adam after he begotten Seth were 800 years, and he begot sons and daughters. And all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. And Seth lived 105 years, and begot Enos. And Seth lived after he begot Enos 807 years, and begot sons and daughters. And all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. And Enos lived 90 years, and begot Canaan. You may be seated. When you read Genesis 5, and we just read about 6 or 7 verses from Genesis 5, are you just itching to draw a timeline? The antediluvian timeline really is fascinating, and there are many lessons to be gleaned from it. Many people, when they read this chapter, and because of the way that it's written, gained the impression that these people live back to back. In other words, one dies before another starts his life. For example, because the genealogy would describe the complete life of one person first, before going to the next, the overlap is not so obvious. In fact, the overlap is remarkable because Adam did not die in verse 5. He was still alive 874 years later, when Lamech was born in verse 25. These overlaps paint an entirely different picture of life back then, and here is the version of the antediluvian timeline. This means that Genesis 5 could also be written the following way. Adam lived 130 years and begat Seth. There's Seth. And when Adam was 235 years, he begot Enos. And when Adam was 325, he begot Canaan. And when Adam was 460 years, he begot Methuselah. When Adam was 460, Methuselah begot Jared. When Adam was 622 years, Jared begot Enoch. When Adam was 687 years old, Enoch begot Methuselah. When Adam was 874 years, Methuselah begot Lamech. When Lamech was 56 years old, Adam died. All the days that Adam lived were 930 years. So he lived all the way down to here. Fascinating. That's 9 generations coexisting at one point in time for 56 years. Most of us know their parents and grandparents, but very few of us know their great-grandparents. But no one knows their great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents. Here are some points of observation from the timeline. Of the 10 antediluvian patriarchs, Methuselah lived the longest. He died the same year as the flood. Methuselah was also the first patriarch to see a son die. All the other patriarchs died before their sons. Methuselah's son, Lamech, died 5 years before the flood. He did not die because of the flood. Lamech was the most short-lived patriarch of the 10. He died at the age of 777. Interesting number. Lamech promised when he called his son's name Noah, which means rest or comfort, saying, "This same shall comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord hath cursed." Genesis 5:29. Enoch prophesied the great flood, and Methuselah was a living prophecy, as his name means, when he is dead, it, that is the flood, shall be sent. All 10 patriarchs saw the deprivation of mankind in their lifetime. Methuselah saw all the patriarchs from Adam die except Enoch, who was translated. Enoch was taken up to heaven at year count 987. Seth was still alive when Enoch was translated. He was 857 years of age. This means that everyone from Seth to Lamech was alive when Enoch was taken up to heaven. Adam was the sole patriarch to die before Enoch's translation. Noah was born 69 years after Enoch's translation. Abel was not counted in the patriarchy as he was slain without offspring. Cain is not in Adam's genealogy as his father was the devil-incarnate serpent who seduced Eve. There's a bunch of scriptures there. Enoch was the seventh from Adam, Jude 14. Had Cain been in Adam's genealogy, Enoch would have been the eighth from Adam. And Genesis 4 records the genealogy of Adam's half-brother Cain. Were he Adam's son, the law of the birthright would have placed Cain in the lineage. Well, there's a lot of things to think about in the passages that tell us about the pre-flood world. There is not much information given in the Bible. What was the world like in the first 1,500 years of world history? It was different from our world, is all I can say. If people lived into their 900s instead of 90s, how advanced in technology would they be? I guess we'll have to wait till we are told in the afterlife. But it does give us one clue that we can use now. The Bible has genealogies. What is the purpose of them if all are equal today? What would be the importance of a genealogy if all individuals are equal? If there's just one race, who cares what the genealogy is? Today's sermon will give you one example of how it will give you understanding of what is happening in today's world. Does anyone remember the shooting that took place last month in the Charter, Colorado STEM school in 2019? One dead and seven wounded. The dead victim was an 18-year-old just 3 days from graduation who attacked the shooters and was shot in the chest and died from his wounds. There were actually three boys who attacked the shooters and he was shot. More about this shooting later in the sermon. But first, does anyone remember the Columbine High School, which was 7 miles from the Sim School murders, that took place in Colorado over 20 years ago? There were 13 killed, 12 students and one teacher, plus many students injured, besides the two shooters who killed themselves by suicide. Who were the shooters? All you probably heard about in the Columbine High School murders is how Jewish kids had to form the trench coat mafia to protect themselves against the jock bullies. The media portrayed Harris and Klebold, the two murderers, as two tormented souls. But what was the real story? Klebold, the mastermind. Dylan Klebold came from a wealthy Jewish family who thought they were superior. Dylan Klebold came from a wealthy Jewish family who thought they were superior. But Klebold was a time bomb. He sung this as he shot the school children. Now he's singing. He's singing this, not me. We hate niggers, spicks, and let's not forget you white POSs, pieces of excrement also. We hate you, unquote. Sounds like a hate crime to me. Who was Dylan Klebold? What was his family tree? I think you might be surprised. Anyway, here's his family tree. First, on his mother's side, they came from a line of Ashkenazi Jews from the Pale settlement in Russia, more specifically the Ukraine, which was under Russian rule at the time. The city they lived in was a town of 40,000 people called Elizabethgrad, known as Kilograd, in the south center of the country. And I've got a map. Anybody see the town? Right there. There's the Ukraine. Kind of in the south middle right there. A little background information. Jews in Russia in the 1800s mostly lived in what was called the Pale of Settlement. And I'll have a map of that in a minute. Which consisted of areas now corresponding to modern-day Poland. Go back to the map, Brandon. The western parts of Russia. Okay, Brandon. Now we get a map of the Pale of Settlement. There's this color here is the Pale of Settlement. There's the Black Sea. This is where most of the Jews lived. Anybody find the town that he lived in? On April 15th, 1881, old style. What was the old style? April 27th, the new style. What was that? Remember, the calendar changed. Took a long time for other countries to adopt it. But the Russians didn't change their calendar in 1917. Right at the end of Passover and during Easter week and 100 years before Dylan was born, a pogrom broke out in Elizabethgrad. There's a 12-day difference in the calendar. Remember George Washington's birthday? America changed. Wake up next day and 12 days further down the calendar. I got a question. How did Christians keep the correct day of the Sabbath if the calendar is 12 days off? Reforming Tsar Alexander II had been assassinated about a month before, and it was claimed that the Jews were to blame. This was the first of what became a long and very ugly series of riots against the Jews called pogroms, that took place between 1881 and 1884, and which led to thousands of Jews, including the Yasinovs, leaving Russia for the United States and other countries. So pogroms took place. They blamed the Jew for the assassination of Alexander II, and there were riots against them. So Isaac Yasinov, as a young man, killed a Russian military person during the pogrom. So what did he do? He fled through Hamburg and got to New York. And for some reason, the HIAS, the Hebrew Immigration Aid Society, sent him to Dayton, Ohio, right up the road. Maybe there were some distant relatives there, or maybe there was just a relative there or a family willing to take him in. It was around the year 1881, and the rest of the family and his four brothers came over one by one, and then later his parents as well came over. Now here's a picture of him. Leo Yasinov's son, Isaac Yasinov's son, Leo Yasinov, Dylan's great-grandfather. He played football for who? Ohio State. He was an offensive lineman for the year 1914 to 1915. What happened in 1914? World War I began. After playing for Ohio State, Leo settled in Columbus with his wife, Betty Upton. She worked in a Jewish orphanage, although she was not Jewish. Leo and Betty had taken interest in one baby at the orphanage. That baby's name was Milton Rice. After adopting him, they settled down with their new baby. Later, they adopted another baby, which they named Abner. The family had two adopted Jewish boys, and their father, Leo, built the Orthodox Synagogue in Columbus, the original Jewish community center. A philanthropist while alive, he left a considerable portion of his assets, over $13 million, to a charitable foundation when he died in 1971. So I was alive then. A Columbus Jewish Community Center is named after Leo. It is called the Leo Yasinoff Jewish Community Center. His adopted son, Milton Rice Yasinoff, the adopted Jewish son of Leo and Betty, went on to marry a non-Jewish girl named Charlotte Emma Hall. They had a baby girl together and named her Susan Yasinoff. Susan was educated in Columbus, Ohio at Temple Israel and attended a Reformed Jewish synagogue that went to church with her mother. Her private school had a chapel which she visited every day. When she was a child, this mixed religious household confused her. And she grappled with her relationship to God. That's a very important sentence. As she grew older, her ties of Judaism disintegrated. She hasn't practiced Judaism since she left her childhood home. But as a mother, she mixed Passover and Easter into one dinner. Question? Did she serve ham? She married Tom Claybold, who was also not Jewish, but Lutheran. They had two sons, Byron and the mass murderer, Dylan. Here is the family tree of Dylan on his, it should be fraternal side, a maternal side. It's correct. So there is the person in the Ukraine. He was born, and then he died in Dayton, Ohio, 1911. He married this girl. Then Isaac, he killed the Russian soldier, so he fled to Dayton. Then there's Leo, multimillionaire, married Beth Eppen, who was not Jewish. Adopted the two boys. Now, Abner committed suicide. Not much said about him. And then Milton married another non-Jewish girl, Charlotte Emma Ho. She married Claybold, and they had two boys. And there was the mass murder. So that's his mother's family tree. What was his family tree on his father's side? On this side of the family, the Klebolds were originally from what is now France, but was under Germany when they lived there. The territory flipped from one to the other. It was called Alsace-Lorraine. That's where World War I was fought, right there. And there's the map of France and Germany. There's right on the edge. I flip back and forth. William, or Wilhelm, Claybold was born in 1844 in Alsace-Lorraine in what is now France, but then was Germany, and died in 1982 in Pearl, Texas. He married Mary Elizabeth Dewey's, who was born in Illinois. She died in Pearl, Texas. Their son, William Henry Claybold, was in Pearl, Texas, married Lillian Grace Ray Claybold, who died in Toledo, Ohio. And then Thomas Ernest Claybold married Susan Frances Yasinoff, and they had the two boys. So all this to say, was Dylan Claybold Jewish or not Jewish? How many say he was Jewish? How many say he was not Jewish? What was he? 17-year-old Dylan's mother, Susan Yasinoff, was a member of the Reform Jewish Synagogue. She attended Temple Israel. Her father, Leo Yasinoff, he was a football player at Ohio State, remember him, multimillionaire, was a wealthy commercial real estate developer in Columbus, Ohio, and a prominent figure in the Jewish community, and was active in Temple Israel. But most Jews say that Dylan was not Jewish. Why? Because his mother was not Jewish. And he was a mass murderer. Traditional Judaism uses maternal descent to determine Jewish status. But all other things, tribal affiliation, priestly status, royalty, so forth, we use paternal descent. The Torah does not specifically state anywhere that material descent should be used. However, the rabbis say there are several passages in the Torah where it's understood that the child of a Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man is a Jew. And several other passages where it's understood that the child of a non-Jewish woman and a Jewish man is not a Jew. What scripture is that? And does it say Jewish or Israelite? We believe that any person who has a child with a person of the wicked seed line, the child is a mongrel with the wicked seed line. It doesn't matter if they were the husband or the wife. What's the Durham's opinion here? In Dylan's maternal line, Leo and Milton married non-Jews. Their names were Betty and Charlotte. Their children, therefore, were not Jews according to the rabbis. Susan was not Jewish, and she was the mother of Dylan. So they say that Dylan was not Jewish. The code of Jewish law clearly states that a child of a Jewish mother is Jewish, regardless of the father's lineage, or whatever else may show up in a DNA test. While the child of a non-Jewish mother is not Jewish, matrilineal descent has been a functional principle of Torah since the Jewish people came into existence. But the Jews do not come from a pure race. They're all mongrels. Cain married who? The curse was on him. All his offspring were cursed. One, they could not farm. How'd that happen? Andy sent it to Cain. Can't farm. Two, they're to be wanderers. There's a plant called the Wandering Jew. Just keeps growing. And three, very important, they cannot hear God's word. Anyone who intermarried into his family line became a mongrel. For mongrel begets mongrels. That is why there are all different races who are Jews. You've probably seen the black Hebrew Jews. We talked about them. And one who marries a Jewish woman and gives birth, his child is Jewish. But the streak can be broken if a Jewish person marries one who is not Jewish. Their children would not be Jewish unless the mother is converted to Judaism. What if the child is born before her conversion and then she converts? Is he Jewish or not Jewish? It is based on faith and not race. What is the reason for this crazy way to tell if a person is a Jew? Very important. Where if there are 100 generations of individuals who are the wicked seed line. So we got the wicked seed line. They married another wicked seed line for 100 generations. Then one marries a person who is not of their seed line. That offspring would be not of the wicked seed line. That's what they say. That's not true. Any part Kenite would be a Kenite. Any part Canaanite would be a Canaanite. Any part Jew would still be a Jew. This is what they're trying to hide. Kind after kind is a biblical law. And the Bible teaches differently from what the Jews say. The Bible is paternal, while Judaism is maternal. This plays a role in the question about whether Dylan is Jewish. Dylan's mother's side was Ashkenazi Jew, which is descended from Japheth, not Shem. Dylan's father's side was German. Dylan was a German-Ashkenazi Jew mixture. He was not a pure holy seed, but a hybrid. If any of the Ashkenazim had intermarried in the seed line of Cain, then Canaan would be of the unholy seed. He wasn't a pure German. He was a mongrel. Eric Harris, Dylan's companion, shotguns his fellow students at point-blank range. He was from New York, who transferred 2 years before the massacre to Colorado. He was under the influence of Luvax, an antidepressant prescribed to treat obsessive-compulsive disorder. Harris was dating a Jewish girl, Sarah Davis. His mother was also Jewish. Their plan included 100-plus bombs being placed all over the school with the hope of killing hundreds of students, and then escaping to Israel. The trench coat mafia was formed to protect Jewish kids, many whom were homosexual. They hated blacks, athletes, and Christian girls. Since Harris's mother was Jewish, he was Jewish according to the Jews' quote-unquote holy books. The main media kept quiet about the Jewish heritage of the killers. They protected their unholy seed. They also were particularly silent about their involvement in Satanism, witchcraft, and heavy metal rock music. They were anti-Christian. They were anti-Christian as they spoke on social media how they hated what Christians said about homosexuality, Satanism, and rock music. They hated so much that these were the people that they targeted. And I heard the father of Rachel Scott come to our school and talk about it. She was the first one they killed. Rachel Scott dated a friend of Dylan's. They were elementary school friends. She dated him at the prom. And he took a gun to her head and says, "Do you like Jesus Christ?" She said, "Yes." And he put the bullet right in her head. STEM school murders. Now we come to the STEM school murders. What about the STEM murders? The main media has learned to keep quiet about the stories that don't fit their agenda. And I'm glad he did the imprecatory prayer again. We keep doing that imprecatory prayer. Does anyone know who the two murderers were? Anybody know who they were? Don't read it up there. Who were the murderers? One was 18 years old and the other was 16 years old. Here's the picture of the 16-year-old shooter when she was 6 years old. What? He was a she? There she is. Maya McKinley as a young girl, 6-year-old girl. And here's her father. Isn't he nice looking? Jose Evis Quintana, mugshot, April 17, 2000. He was arrested and deported to Mexico from Castle Rock, Colorado. Oh. He's an illegal alien? The son of an illegal Mexican alien who is changing from a female to a male and who's also anti-Trump. Hey, this is bad news for the media. Gotta keep us out of the media. Here's a picture of Bayless' father, an illegal alien who was captured several times and deported. I'll tell you a few times about his record. Jose Evis Quintela, 33, was jailed for 15 months for domestic violence against McKinney's mother, Morgan Lynn McKinney, and menacing with a weapon. Get this. Despite terrorizing Morgan, who's 32, he convinced her to marry him in 2009 in Castle Rock, Colorado. I bet he didn't go through the procedure of asking her parents for the right to marry her. He was deported back to Mexico in 2010, and Morgan, who has 3 children with him, divorced him in 2015. Quintana illegally came back into the country and was deported again in 2017. Do we need a fence? Do we need a wall? Maya posted on Twitter how she missed her father just 11 days before the May 7th shooting at STEM school Highlands Ranch near Denver, Colorado. Myla and her friend, Davin Erickson, who's 18, allegedly shot 9 students, killing 1, in appeal in court on Wednesday, May 15th. Here's a picture of Myla. Now it's called Alec, A-L-E-C. He wrote about missing his father just 11 days before allegedly shooting 8 students and killing another at STEM school ranch on May 7th. Transgender McKinney, who was born a girl called Maya, had turned 16 on April 14th and wrote on Twitter on April 26th, quote, "My mom talking to me about how he hates the new Alex. Mom, I miss my Alex. Can you find him for me?" Alec wrote back, "I miss my dad. Can you find him for me?" Records of Dulles County District Court in Castle Rock, Colorado, showed Quintana had been jailed for 15 months in August 2009 for menacing with a weapon and domestic violence against hairstylist Morgan. There's a picture of his wife. Quintana and Morgan had Alex, born Maya Elizabeth, on April 14, 2003. In January 2007, the couple had a son, and in July 2008, they had another daughter. But just 2 months later, on August 22, 2008, 5 feet 10 inches tall, Quintana was charged with attempting to kidnap, menacing with a weapon, and failing to stop for police. He was jailed on February 3, 2009, pending his trial, when he failed to see a court official. Court papers said Quintana wishes to stay in custody since he has a problem with drugs and alcohol. The court agreed and allowed Quintana to have supervised visits with Maya, or Alex, and his siblings in jail on condition Morgan was not present. On July 29, 2009, with Quintana in jail pending his trial, Morgan successfully gained permanent custody of their 3 children. Also, the wife gained complete custody of the 3 children. On September 2009, Quintana was sentenced to 15 months in prison when all the charges against him, apart from menacing Morgan with a weapon, were dropped. He was also ordered to undergo domestic violence counseling. Despite the sentence and the crimes Quintana committed against her, Morgan married Quintana in Castle Rock on November 28, 2009. Quintana was then deported and sent back to Mexico on December 9, 2010. In divorce papers filed by Morgan on November 19, 2014, Morgan described how Quintana has been traveling illegally between Colorado and Mexico since the deportation. Morgan was never able to serve her husband with papers, but the court granted her divorce on May 11, 2015. On December 27, 2016, police in Castle Rock learned a warrant had been issued against Quintana in New Mexico for domestic violence. They found him at a house in Castle Rock and arrested him for being a fugitive from justice. He was jailed pending his extradition to New Mexico. Lovely, lovely husband. Here's the lead shooter, Maya Alex McKinney, right with his mother in 2018. The other shooter, besides McKinley, was Davin Erickson, who was angry about anti-gay comments made by Christians. The Washington Times reported Erickson, citing Heavy.com, said on social media he hated Christians for their teaching on homosexuality. Here's the quote. "You know what I hate. All these Christians who hate gays. Yet in the Bible it says in Deuteronomy 17, verse 12 and 13, if someone doesn't do what their priest tells them to do, they are supposed to die." It has plenty of crazy stuff like that. But all they get out of it is, ooh, gays, he wrote on Facebook in 2016. The teen's social media pages indicate he is a registered Democrat, and his Snapchat account is under the name of Devin Kills. He had a car. How was parents allowed to do this? He had a car that was painted with words, F blank 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 society, and on the roof were the numbers 666 and a pentagram. Are you surprised he was involved in Satanism? It is now being reported that details of the case will remain secret to the public after it was sealed by a judge. What? And here's the quote. Dallas Community District Judge Teresa Slade has put the charges along with the entire case file under seal, banning the public from seeing it, reports Reuters. The shooting appeared to have disappeared from the headlines quickly when it turned out that the individuals responsible were anti-Trump leftists and that one of them was transgendered and the son of an illegal alien who had been deported several times and then thrown in jail. One wonders if the media's reaction would have been different if it were two Trump supporters who were the shooters. There is a double standard with our media. They smear a smirking boy who did nothing, vilified by the media, while an actual school shooter was largely ignored. Remember this guy? Oh. And here is Devin Erickson with his purple hair when he went to court. Both students are minors. One smiled calmly at an Indian while his personal space was invaded with a big drum. Remember that? The other is a murderer. Which one was smeared by the media for an entire week, sent death threats by celebrities, and had his name released despite being underage? The one had a Trump hat on, Make America Great Again, and attended a pro-life march in Washington, D.C. The other was pro-death and hated what the Bible said about the issues that affected his life. Now, how can there be peace? The media, which is supporting pro-death, is opposed to God's law of life. What side do you think is pro? And what side is anti? Now you know why Dylan was so confused. He was a hybrid. An unholy seed, mixed with some good seed, produces an unholy seed. The way of the serpent is death. The world is in a war between God's word and the serpent's way. There can never be peace until one of the two seeds is gone. To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.